Hi, and welcome to Becoming Less, an Edmontonian journey to less waste, less impact, less consumption, and less clutter. Becoming Less is brought to you by Waste Free Edmonton, and together we are dedicated to waste reduction efforts, big and small. I'm Biz, and I'm here today with Olivia, who is, I don't know, what would you call yourself, Olivia?
An eco-minimalist, I guess, and also just a sustainability advocate more than anything.
Awesome. Yeah, you've got a YouTube channel that has some interesting... I just love hearing some of your takes on waste reduction and environmentalism, but specifically, I really enjoyed your video on eco-minimalism, because we've talked a lot about minimalism on the show previously, but never really identified the difference between minimalism as an aesthetic and as an environmental movement.
Yeah, definitely two very, very different things. So coming from the United States, which is very, very consumer focused, you know, growing up in America and being American, like you learn that to succeed is to just consume and to have like a very aesthetic like lifestyle and things like that. And so I guess when I got into minimalism, it was with the intention of creating like an aesthetic for myself. And I very quickly realized that that does not necessarily line up with the aims of sustainability. And so I think for me, finding eco-minimalism really helps to like bridge that gap, because instead of being focused on just having like a perfectly like curated apartment or making sure that I don't have any like plastic or anything around me, it's more about how can I consume the least amount of resources as possible and not be focused on the aesthetics. And make choices when I'm buying things that make it to where I have to buy less. I'm trying to think of specific examples of this. So like something I promote pretty heavily is not always buying like perfect products, you know, because I think like things that look sustainable sometimes are not produced sustainably at all. And we end up dealing with things like greenwashing, you know?
Yeah, I see it everywhere. If you, it's like, this is a good swap for a wasteful product. It's like, yeah, but you could just not buy it at all and you'd still be okay.
Yeah. And you know, something I think about a lot is like plastic coffee cups. Like this is something that I have a really specific example of, is the idea of eco shame and how companies that want to sell you a sustainable product will eco shame you into buying a product that you maybe don't need. So the example of a reusable coffee cup, for example, if you already have a reusable coffee cup, you don't need another one. But if you're out shopping, you might think, oh, I need this. I need another one because I don't know. Maybe you just think that you do, or you get sucked into the capitalist marketing and you think you're doing something good. But in the long run, that really heavy plastic reusable coffee cup might be a worse environmental choice than using a paper cup or something like that, because it takes more resources to produce. So it's just about being really careful and not falling like prey to marketing more than anything.
I understand that completely. I struggle with that as well. Like there's this image that I want to portray as an environmentalist to normalize reusables. So if I happen to be in a situation where I need a coffee, which mostly I can't really think of a situation where I need a coffee so bad that I can't say no because I don't have a cup. But you're faced with that choice of, do I buy a reusable cup to save face or get the paper cup and have the imagery associated with the disposable versus the impact that one paper cup versus one reusable cup would make?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question, because if you're just buying something because you think it's sustainable, but you don't actually need it, and it takes a lot of resources to make, that can end up being an unsustainable choice, even if the intention of it is to be sustainable. So it's just a question. There's so many questions. This is with environmentalism. So I have a pretty substantial background in environmentalism. My mother was an earth science teacher growing up, and I was pretty actively involved in college in an environmental activism group. We're specifically focusing on like oil funding within our university, and just the way that it all kind of like trickles down, you know, and makes it to where like the information that's being produced is not always correct, you know, and that leads to greenwashing and things like that. And so it's just one of those things where you have to be really, really careful and think about what makes the most sense for you. for me, it's always about like bridging the gap between, it's like what the consumer needs versus what the producers want the consumer to think they need.
Yeah. I haven't actually really heard the phrase eco-shaming. Greenwashing, absolutely. So can you kind of explain the difference between eco-shaming and greenwashing?
So greenwashing is, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I think it's just like when a company tries to put out the front that everything that they're doing is sustainable, they're offering you a product and it's a product that is like sustainably sourced, or they market in a way that makes you think it's sustainably sourced. If they say it's natural, for example, or they'll say like that it's made of like recycled materials or things like that, but it could be like a very unsustainable product all around. Or the source materials for the product could be just, you know, absolutely horrible for the environment. So that's what greenwashing is. Eco-shame is something different. Eco-shame is actually something that people in the sustainability community have created, I think. And it's getting hijacked by corporations.
As so, everything does, right? Everything.
Yeah. But, you know, we do feel a sense of shame. We're always like thinking about climate change and things like that. And something I talk about a little bit is like climate anxiety and people just being nervous about the future and nervous about what the coming years are going to bring with climate change. And so we have the tendency to feel guilt ourselves for consuming. And I talk about a lot on my YouTube channel about that, about my own experiences feeling guilt for just like buying normal human things, you know?
There's definitely a difference between consuming and consumerism.
Definitely. Yeah. And that's something that I talk about a lot, is that it's like, it's okay to have hobbies, even if you, I always say to put consumption, to consume mindfully. Consuming mindfully is more important than trying to consume the least amount of possible. Because I think that when people, especially for people who just start getting into sustainability, if they try to do the extreme minimalism, just go straight into it, like you can make yourself really miserable. I mean, if you really start to think about it, every little thing that you bring into your home is potentially something that could pollute the environment. It just depends on the way that you deal with those things once they get into your house, you know?
Yeah, everything that we buy eventually becomes garbage. Everything that comes in here, although it might not seem like garbage to you at the time, it will eventually become garbage.
Yeah, it's a balancing act, right? Because what I'm trying to get people to do is find something that is sustainable for them. Find a path with sustainability. Because what people do, and I've seen this so, so much, because I grew up in kind of like rural Indiana where there's just not a lot of education around sustainability. There's just not a lot of, people don't really talk about it. Like, you know, it's also very, especially in the United States, like very politicized in a weird way. So it just doesn't make sense. But people don't really get the education in some of the places that I grew up. And they just don't talk about it because it's inconvenient. And as soon as you make it something to where it's just like people think they have to constantly like withhold from themselves, like little things that make them happy, or they have to do the inconvenient thing, instead of telling people that they always have to do something that makes them feel like they're like living in austerity, I think it's better to frame it as something where you're like telling people, save your money. You know, it's something that you can save your money if you're not spending your money on things that you don't need. Like, if instead of buying like a bunch of new clothes, if you don't need them, like, don't make that like your hobby. Make something else your hobby. Make like painting your hobby. That's like something that I do now. Or like buy an instrument or something that is going to give you something that is more constructive than just the simple act of consuming. So it's kind of like reallocating your consumption to areas that are something that generates creativity for you. And not just creativity. It could be like, I don't know, I think creativity is an interesting thing, because when you come away from the consumption of things for like painting or singing or, you know, cooking and things like that, like whatever your hobby is, like you have something on the other side of that. So maybe there is a waste byproduct, but you're getting something back, as opposed to just buying like jewelry or makeup or like things that you can wear it for a while, but you're not learning a new skill. You're not creating something new. You're not transforming those materials into something special. It's a different relationship with consumption when you start to do that, I think, when you focus more on putting your money into your hobbies or things that really, really matter to you.
Right. It's applying a value to the item that is beyond the physical thing itself. So yeah. Like for paint, as an example, when you buy paint, you don't get a painting, you get paint. And so that still mm-hmm. has to transform into something that is all you mm-hmm. versus buying clothes. You get the clothes and that's all it is. It never will be anything more than that.
Yeah. And part of it too is it's like, it's interesting because when you start to view consumption in that way, I've noticed, especially in myself, like I start to get depressed if I find myself falling into old consumption patterns, because you start to rewire your brain to understand that when you spend money in the way that our capitalist society is kind of programmed us to spend our money, there's diminishing returns. Like you don't have any money anymore. You did something that's bad for the environment. And if you're aware of that, that can feel really bad. And then on top of that, you didn't really invest that money anywhere that is going to give you a return long term.
Yeah, no, that's a great way of looking at it.
I think about consumption more about money and capitalism. I think, and the sustainability side of it is important, but if we can't convince people to just stop shopping as a hobby, you know, stop like buying things just for fun all the time, like that's really the worst part, I think, of consumption. And I think that people, it's something that's conditioned into people through advertising.
That little spike of whatever it is that you get when you buy something that lasts all of like 20 seconds.
Yeah, you get to the car and it's gone. And then you're just like, why did I do this?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, definitely. And that's something that we've been conditioned since, you know, we were born. Everyone, especially like our generation, we've been conditioned to just, you know, be capitalist consumption machines. And it doesn't benefit the working class. It doesn't benefit normal people. It's not a good way to live your life in terms of sustainability. It's not a good way to live your life financially.
It's also a really good way to keep the poor poor.
It is. And that's something that I think about a lot. It's like, if you keep telling people that they need to, you know, the idealized wealth, right? That's like in all of like the movies and the rap songs and everything like that, is what it's talking about, like wealth and things like that, which I think could be funny if we view it from like the position of like comedy. But if you start to idealize wealth and consumption and acquiring things that have a price point that's way outside of what they're actually worth, like that's very, very dangerous. And it only serves to benefit the 1% of any economy.
You used the word conditioning earlier, and I'm like, mm-hmm. yep, that's what it is. Isn't that scary?
It's scary, but once you realize what it is, you can break it down.
You can overcome it, yeah.
Definitely. I think a lot of it is centered around like mental health. Like you have to be able to control your mind and have good mental health. And that's always a struggle because like even in the Canadian healthcare system in Alberta, like you don't necessarily get mental health resources covered by your health insurance, and certainly not in the United States. It's something that's very overlooked. And I question why, you know, and it makes me think like, why is it something that we're not addressing? And I think that it would probably fix a lot of the consumption problems that people have, you know, like people would stop drinking so much, people would stop doing drugs, people would stop overeating, like, because we do those things to fill a void. And when we're not addressing those issues within ourselves, we turn and we destroy our environment around us because we're being mindless with the way we consume.
You actually used a phrase that I really enjoyed from one of your videos, and it was, mm-hmm. the environment is not just outside.
Yeah.
Like the whole process of it being part of a larger system, and that even people who don't go outside still suffer the damages to our environment.
Especially people who don't go outside suffer the damages. Like that's actually really interesting. Well, yeah, seriously, because like you think even in Edmonton, like there's giant, you know, oil refineries all over the city. And if you drive out to Sherwood Park, like you can see all the smog and things like that. It's kind of unsettling coming from living like out in the country sort of to being in a big city and seeing all the pollution. It's so easy to just shut your window, you know, and not think about it. But that's not really how it works. Like we're all, for now at least, contained on this planet. And it just, I think, you know, people really have a pretty harsh disconnect between nature and themselves. And we're just getting farther and farther away from it. And I'm definitely, I had an issue with viewing myself as kind of like a naturalist and idealizing like nature and things like that. And I try not to do that anymore, but we have to find a bridge between, you know, big city life and it just not being like, you know, giant city and then the mountains, you know, like people don't really live the way that they used to anymore, you know, where people were living on farms and, you know, raising their own food and hunting. Cause like my family hunts and my grandma like grows tomatoes and stuff. And so I've always just kind of had like the exposure to like gardening and farming and things like that growing up. And I don't think a lot of people have that. And I think that's what creates the disconnect.
I have to say, I was 24, 25 when I realized that Brussels sprouts grew off the side of a stem and not as like little tiny heads of Brussels sprout in the ground directly. Mm-hmm. Like I had no idea that broccoli was the blossoms of the flower that haven't opened yet. Like I had no idea.
Yeah. And people just don't learn these things. And it's funny, you know, I'm trying to get into permaculture and eventually I want to buy like a little piece of land, maybe near like Hinton or something like that, and just like have my own farm and try to do things as sustainably as possible. But I don't know why we're not teaching people this in school. And maybe it's something to do with like Monsanto or something like that. But I mean, I think it's, you know, yeah. Not like it is. But I think that people, they're losing their relationship with food, you know, like.
Yeah, people just think that it somehow magically shows up at the grocery store, exactly. But there's so much more behind it.
That's the connection, too, that I think when we say that people are disconnected from their environment, it's through food. Food is the primary way where people are disconnected because you can just literally get anything like shipped to you from the grocery store. You don't even have to drive. You don't even have to go outside of your house to pick something up from the grocery store anymore.
No.
And that is concerning.
The food is probably the biggest, most constant consumption of natural resources. But I mean, our clothes mm-hmm. and our shelter and our heat are all part of the environment as well. And these things, mm-hmm. we need them to survive. And people just think that they are and don't seem to have any idea of where they actually come from or any reverence for where they come from, I guess.
Definitely. It's funny because like when you talk about like the household, the way that like a household functions, like people don't realize that they're consuming pollutants constantly. Like in even the soap you use, like it's polluting the environment. And so you have to try to go back and think about every single product that you have. And is this going to break down? And is this going to be sustainable for me? And is it effective for what I need it to do? Because people are creatures of innovation. And we always want to find the most effective product. Or like, I think about like Febreze in the aerosol can. Like people don't realize that like they are potentially giving themselves like bronchitis or something like that. Like if you're sick and you spray that enough, like you'll get even more sick. Like, because that is going to like damage your lungs if you use too much of it. It's a pollutant. It can make you very sick, but people don't view it that way.
No. Funnily enough, they're like, oh, the odor is bad, but this chemical-ridden scent is good, and so I'm going to go switch to that. But the odor probably isn't causing you any like health problems.
Yeah. Because it's probably just like something that we're pretty normalized to like be able to deal with our bodies, you know, but
yeah, I feel like there's just like this disconnect between like this mild inconveniences that we find in our lives and the true value, like beyond money, of the choices we make to counter those inconveniences.
Yeah, and it's hard with money, especially because it's just when people spend money on something, they expect it to work immediately. You know, it's the immediate gratification of I want to buy this thing and it has to work.
Just to fix this hole in my life.
Exactly. I always go back to like the mental health side of things because like all of the little things of life that we're buying all these products to try to like fix the problems for, it's like, you know, it's good to have things to clean your house. It's good to have like general life things, you know, like I'm not saying that we should just have like nothing. Like I don't promote that at all, but when you feel like you need to keep accumulating things in one specific area of your life, that's kind of something you could look at as maybe say like, what is the neurotic behavior here? Like, what is the behavior that, what is it in my psychology that's making me prey to this advertisement, to this consumption practice. And most of it comes from, you know, insecurities that we have or instability in our life or things like that. Like I talk about like makeup and stuff. Like I really like makeup and I was really involved in like theater and stuff growing up. But I had a consumption problem with it for a couple of years. Like I was way over consuming it, just buying to buy. And that's pretty normalized in the makeup community online. I took all of it and I didn't let myself buy any. Like it all went bad and I was just like, I'm not going to buy any makeup. And that wasn't good for me either. So it was a balancing act. It was a balance to find like, how much can I have to where it is a creative hobby of mine, but I'm not over consuming because I don't feel beautiful enough or I don't feel like I'm, you know, enough, because as women, we're conditioned to believe that our physical beauty is like all that we are. And we're always trying to achieve a heightened level of like physical beauty. And just telling myself that like, you don't have to do that, you know, or having like the most clean house. Like if you buy a bunch of cleaning products, like you don't have to have a perfectly clean house in order to be a healthy person. In fact, being exposed to some microbes and bacteria and stuff like that is actually good for your body.
I find that kind of funny because I probably have done this to myself in the past, is buying cleaning products. Like just buying the cleaning products doesn't make your house cleaner if you aren't using them. So if you're just buying a bunch of stuff and it just is accumulating underneath your sink or wherever you store your cleaning stuff, then you're just buying for the sake of buying and not putting it to any use anyway.
Yeah. And you know what's weird about that too is individuals, I don't think, do this, but as society, we shame people for behaving in ways that are considered not normal. And I think people who get involved with sustainability face this a lot because we don't do things the normal way. You know, we kind of like, I have a compost bucket in my tiny apartment and my husband for a long time was like, that's disgusting. Like, why are you doing that? But you have to teach people and explain to them and help them understand why you're behaving in these ways. And a lot of times people don't want to go through that perhaps difficult process with their loved ones to get to a place where they understand, but it's important.
I enjoy having my worms. They get fed once a week and they just kind of hang out in the corner. No big deal. Don't bother anybody. But
yeah, dude.
My husband was the same. He was just like, if that smells, I don't want it in here. No odors as of yet. And it's been there for almost 6 months now. So
that's an interesting thing, too, to talk about the concept of odors and our relationship to smell, because that's one of the most primal instincts that animals have, right? People have this very strange relationship with just their own functions and their own bodily functions, like feeling like they constantly need to be like smelling like flowers and things like that, which is bad for the environment. But then also the constant need to, you know, make everything else seem perfect and like it doesn't smell. Like the process of compost, for example, like there is a certain smell that comes with it if it's warm out or things like that. And it doesn't smell bad necessarily, but it's not something that you're probably used to. And those are just like the basic things of life. Like, for example, if you live out on a farm, you're probably using cow manure to fertilize your food. That's a part of the process. And it seems like a part of the process that we're just kind of like glazing over, the decomposition phase. I don't know.
We totally lose the decomposition phase. Everyone just like create, consume, throw it away. And it's done, but it's not done. It's still there.
We just don't think that that's part of it because we don't see it.
Right. Out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah. I've been thinking a lot about like what is the most sustainable like resource for people to be using, because, you know, we're always talking about like innovating and creating new things. Cause that's just human nature. But I don't always think that's good, you know, especially with sustainability. It's not bad to innovate, but it takes a while, I think, for the planet to catch up to our innovation and learn how to break down those materials. And we're just cranking them out like crazy. And the planet's just like, what do I do with all this? You know,
we've gotten to the point now where people are innovating and then making us feel like we have this need that we didn't know was there. Like the innovation comes before the need, which is just backwards.
Oh yeah, definitely. And it's just a marketing thing. It's a way to make money. If a company can take, especially sustainability, because that, what a noble pursuit, right? No one's going to, you know, hate on you for trying to save the planet, in air quotes. But if you can create a product that is an innovative that you can greenwash, even if you don't have the research to back up the fact that it's actually sustainable, even if you don't know how that breaks down in a landfill, but you think that because you produced it with hemp or bamboo, that that item is going to break down organically in the same way as something that's produced like cotton or something that we have more research on. I mean, we just don't always know. We just don't always know long-term what the impact is going to be. I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about it. And coming to Canada, like logging and the forests here are huge for the economy. It makes me think, it's like, how do you, like, maybe this is a question for you. What is the Canadian relationship with logging and with the forest in general? Like, do you think people have this awareness, or do you think that people just kind of take it for granted, or do you, because like there aren't forests like this where I'm from. Like, we don't have, they cut them all down. Like, we don't have trees out there. We have farmland.
Well, I think it depends on which part of Canada. Like, here, I would say there's not a lot of appreciation or awareness around it. But I've also lived in BC, where more of the logging happens. Because, of course, in Alberta, there's a lot less logging, more farming and oil, right? But in BC, it's much more prevalent. And it's very important in the forest industry to replant everything that's taken. And that also helps with the forest cycles. Because, of course, young forests support certain wildlife, and middle-aged forests support certain wildlife, and old forests support certain wildlife. And so that constant rotation needs to happen, and it'll happen through logging or it'll happen through wildfires. And so it's very, like, I was very aware of it when I lived in BC. It's not really something talked about here.
That's like really beautiful. That's like a relation, like, that's a relationship with nature, you know? And that is, people just understanding how something like that works, like, is so important to bridging that gap between, like, inside my house is not the environment. It's like, well, your house is built with lumber from trees, you know, like all the minerals that go into your grout were like mined from the earth. Like, it's just, people definitely have this big disconnect, but I think, like, it's just not being exposed to it more than anything.
I would say that that was probably one of the big culture shocks moving to Alberta from BC is it's not like I didn't expect there to be more oil talk and less forestry talk. But in BC, it was really important to keep that cycle happening, and then that putting life back into the ground was just as important as taking the resources out of it. Whereas here, it just seems like, sell more oil, sell, sell, sell. Like, I'm just like, okay, what's your like end game plan here? And no one seems to think about that here. It kind of boggles my mind.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, for sure. That's so weird too, because I mean, coming to Canada, it definitely seems like people have more of a connection with nature than they do where I'm from.
And you came to Alberta. Try going to BC. They're a bunch of hippies.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's beautiful. And I'm like really excited to be here because like, I've always wanted to just get into like forest management and stuff like that. Like, that's like a huge passion of mine. Like, I would just love to like work for like Parks Canada and do that kind of work. But that's not really like a thing in the United States. And, you know, we talk about as Canadians, like trying to like do the best that you can do and like building that relationship. And it just seems like everyone here has much more of like a developed understanding of it. But like, what terrifies me is that the country I come from, it does not seem like even in the areas that are supposedly like focused on sustainability that people really get it.
It scares me a little that your perspective coming from the States to Alberta, because Alberta, of course, is the least environmental province of Canada, I would say, and that you say that we are so much more aware and concerned about it than the States. I'm like, wow, that must be just not good down there.
And the States is just like consume, 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 consume constantly. And there are some people who, this is what it's like in the States, like people just don't pay attention to it, or people are like freaking out about it. And it seems like there's kind of like people who are like really into like higher education and who are doing like the educational work who kind of like try to bridge the gap between those two worlds. But yeah, I mean, you either have like really bad climate anxiety or you just pretend that climate change isn't happening in the States, kind of. But I don't know.
It does seem a little more polarized down there.
It's totally, yeah, definitely, definitely.
What would you say mm-hmm. are like the top changes that you've made that would make a big impact? Like,
biggest thing is to take care of my mental health, because I think like unless you do that first and foremost, you cannot undo the capitalist conditioning. You cannot be in control of your consumption impulses if you are not in control of your mind. So just making sure that you're able to tell yourself you don't need that. That's not going to make you feel better. Like, do something more constructive instead. Like, you don't need to just consume to fill the void. That's the biggest thing. I think that that's honestly like, yeah, instead of picking like really like specific things, I just think that that all around is just like, it's so important. And people don't, we kind of just don't talk about it, you know, like we don't view that as part of like sustainability, but it totally is, because otherwise you just end up getting sucked into marketing. And I think that that's really, really well-intentioned people get sucked into marketing because they don't control their own minds. You know, they allow the aisles of the grocery store to control their mind for them, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So contentment and mindfulness, so important.
Mm-hmm. Mindfulness is, I think, the biggest, yeah.
Yeah, it plays such a big part that we probably don't even realize.
It's, I think, honestly, the biggest part of sustainability is just mindfulness. Like, something I always talk to my husband about is, like, the concept of, like, why do we have, like, why do people, like, accumulate silverware? You know, like, you need one fork. Every human in the house needs one fork. And then you don't have to do dishes. You're not wasting the resources by buying the product. You're not over encumbering yourself with things that you don't need to give yourself a false sense of security. Because I think sometimes people accumulate because they feel like they don't have, you know, material security. They don't feel like they have enough money, or they feel like they need to just hold on to everything because they don't have the resources that they need. But just encumbering yourself with things that aren't actually going to benefit your life, like it doesn't give you material security. You know, you should be buying things like food if you're trying to like feel more secure and things like that. So
that's so funny, because years ago when my husband first moved in with me, he's like, okay, well, if I'm gonna move in, we need more than one fork. Because I literally just had one fork, one spoon, one knife, one cup, one bowl.
Yeah,
that's all I had. And I had no stove. I had a little hot plate. And I'm like, this is good. This is all I need. But he's like,
but people think that's weird.
Yeah, well, we got a stove and we got some silverware, but we did get them both secondhand. So yeah, at least there's that.
That's the biggest thing too. Like, if you're going to consume, always consume secondhand if you can. Like, I buy so much stuff off of Facebook Marketplace. I try not to shop at Value Village. Value Village, even though it's secondhand, is like pretty bad for the environment. They basically just take people's trash, and if they don't think they can sell it, they like compact it and throw it away.
Yeah, I mean, 90% of it gets thrown away anyway.
But people think they're doing something good. You know, that's greenwashing right there. You know, they market themselves as being sustainable, but yeah, and it's good. It's good that people can buy something secondhand. So it's kind
of, I think, Goodwill is a much better organization than Value Village overall.
Yeah, Goodwill has some labor problems, but in terms of, yeah, I know Value Village is pretty bad.
So, I mean, if you are going to donate your stuff somewhere, being mindful of where you're taking it makes a difference too.
Or just giving it away. Like, I mean, I know some people, I mean, you're giving it away anyway. If you're giving it to Value Village, like, just put it on like Facebook Marketplace for free if you're going to give it away. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Kijiji is my friend, and I haven't really ventured into Facebook Marketplace, but it sounds like it's growing in popularity, so I should really check it out.
But yeah, those are like my best tips, I guess. But it's pretty basic. Buy secondhand and be in control of your not even just your mental health, but just like your mind in general.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Okay, so if people want to follow you, where can they find you?
You can just type in Olivia Adams and I'll pop up. Yeah, I have lots of videos about sustainability. I also make beauty content, and I just make like weird videos too, because, you know, I love sustainability, but I have other things that I also love in my life. So
you're multifaceted? What?
Yeah, right. You know, and that's like something too about sustainability, right? Like, I think sometimes can get caught on this like one track mind of like, how do I just do the least amount of damage? Because we see so many people around us like constantly consuming, and we want to do the best we can because we know other people aren't.
Yes, compensating for other people is, mm-hmm. that is definitely something I struggle with too. Yep.
People are multifaceted. It's okay to have hobbies. It's okay to enjoy your life, even if sometimes it's not the most sustainable choice. When we are doing that, we're able to make better choices in other areas. So it's all just about making the best choice, finding something that is going to be the most efficient for you while also being the least damaging to the environment.
Be mindful, take care of yourself. I like it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Olivia.
For sure.
And I want to say thank you to all our listeners and thank you to Change Toothpaste who sponsor this podcast, because Emily and I are volunteers and podcasting is not free, so they cover the costs for us.
Wow.
Yeah. It's nice. It's really nice to not have to add another bill.
Yeah, dude.
To be able to do this. If anyone would like to find Becoming Less, you can find us on Instagram at Becoming Less Pod or go to becominglesspod.podbean.com for all the ways to connect and listen. And you can find ways to donate to support waste reduction efforts there, as well as wastefree.ca or on patreon.com/becominglesspod. Thanks again all for listening. Until next time, every day we can be a little less than we were yesterday. Oh, I thought you were spam.